Hi, Sally Stelain. Welcome back to The Garden Show and Home, brought to you by Victoria Gardens, Plant Nursery and Garden Center on Route 213 in Rosendale, victoriagardens.biz. Stories Nursery in Freehold, New York, a gardener's destination for over 60 years. Open year-round. Visit them at storiesnursery.com. And the Phantom Gardener, sustainable and organic garden solutions on Route 9 in Rhinebeck and at thephantomgardener.com. And today, John Ferrante is here from Wallkill View Farm Market in New Paltz. He's busy growing food. Just like he's third generation of food growers in at Wallkill View Farm Market. So you started in February in the high tunnels, just, you know, starting to grow things. And it just doesn't stop for you.
No, yeah, that what we seeded in, or what we transplanted in February, right? We seeded in January, because that time of year it takes so long for the seeds to start. So, you know, we don't even have our greenhouses are open year round now at the up in our production facility.
Wow. So, okay, so tomatoes. We've been talking about tomatoes. So feeding tomatoes and watering tomatoes, and I don't know. Do you have a favorite staking method and tying method?
I'm sure it has a name. I don't know if it's a Florida weave or something. I don't know what the name is, but right. So we plant our tomatoes about 2 feet apart, and then a stake every two tomatoes. So that, I guess, I don't know how many feet that would end up being. It sounds like it's 4 feet, but so, you know, two tomatoes, and then we just sandwich the tomato plants with a, you know, string on either side is how we do it. We don't do any clipping or anything like that.
So as they grow, you just keep wrapping the string to keep them like all together, sort of in a trellis.
Yes. Yeah. So as they grow, usually once a week throughout their growing season, sometimes twice if it's like really crazy and when they're growing fast. But as they're growing, you need to keep going. It usually ends up being about five ties, maybe 8 inches apart, 8 to 10 inches apart, going up the plant.
So the rows are long.
Yeah, rows are long, usually about 300 feet long, three
wow.
to 400 feet long. Don't like to get over that because then it's tough to, when you're picking, you have to carry, you know, the all the way out and around.
So, yeah, because you can't get around, you can't go on through the rows.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So, yeah. So, can you see that? Can somebody see your trellising system?
Sometimes from the road, right? Sometimes when you're passing by, I think you can see it. But it's a pretty standard trellis system for what, you know, any kind of commercial farm around here would be using in the open field.
And it keeps, that definitely keeps the plant off the ground. And it really, instead of like trying to maintain all these different plants, you're kind of treating them like one thing, because everything's getting tied at once. You don't have to just go out there and make it a decision about how's this plant, how's that plant. Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. Staking tomatoes, tomato cages, I think, are one, or like they were invented to make gardeners insane.
They're kind of tough. You got to fit it over top of the plant, and then as the plant grows, you're trying to figure out which way to put it. But it does work for one plant, right? If you just had one plant in a pot or somewhere that you didn't want to, you know, have a little mini row of tomatoes, it's a nice thing for one individual plant. But I wouldn't.
Who has that kind of restraint?
No.
I think since heirlooms became really available, and we learned so much about them, and we've gotten so into like different, all the different flavors, I don't know anybody who has like two tomato plants.
Yeah, some sort of you know, tomato steaks and string. But you do have to do some sort of trellis if you want to have high quality tomatoes. You can't just let them grow on the ground. Disease, squirrels, you know, everything will just come for them.
As soon as a tomato hits the ground, it starts to mold.
Yeah, just it's wet. It's a perfect environment for that. And the soil is where usually, you know, if there is any overwintering disease pressure from the following year in your tomato patch. The ground is where it is, right? That's where it's starting. So anytime you can get the foliage, anything off the ground is better.
So do you change where you plant them every year?
Yes, yeah, you kind of got to. I think with tomatoes, especially in a small plot of even if it's just, 10 feet to the side, it's the best practice. So you might as well, right? It doesn't make sense to keep it in the same spot every year.
Yeah, okay, so move it around. What do you fertilize?
Yeah, so we have trickle irrigation set up on all of ours. When we were talking about disease and different things, obviously overhead irrigation is a way to just soak down the plant and any sort of, fungus or mold just likes growing in that environment. So we use trickle irrigation down the row, and that's where we'll fertilize through that.
Oh, so you fertilize through your irrigation system.
Yes, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice and efficient way to get it so we don't have to, put a whole bunch of fertilizer down at once. We can kind of spread that out throughout the season so we're not, wasting fertilizer, and also the plant can then uptake it, a little bit better.
And the great thing about that is that if we have a lot of rain, that washes the fertility out of the soil a lot faster. So you're kind of able to sort of gauge what's going on. Do you test the soil as the season goes on, or are you just doing it by,
We just do it, so we'll do a soil test once every year or every other year, just to get a kind of a baseline. Depending on if the plant is looking weird or kind of looks like there's a nutrient deficiency, maybe we'll do a foliar analysis, which you can do. You can send out for that, and that will give you a little bit more, detail of what's in there. But that's very rare. I mean, I would say once every 5 years, I might just do it for fun, just to see where we're at. But most of the time, it's just a program that has worked in the past.
and it seems like the end of the season, the leaves always look terrible, but the plants are still making like tons of tomatoes.
Yeah, towards the end of the season, right? All those nutrients are going into the tomatoes and everything that you've harvested off of it, and then even still at the end, there might be producing the tomatoes, and all of those nutrients are going towards the fruit.
So you don't have to worry so much when the plant starts looking terrible, I think. I've learned that, boy, you still get a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah, no, you don't have to worry about it. Tomato plants sometimes can look ugly and still produce great fruit.
So, pollination, tomatoes and pollination. Are most tomatoes are self-pollinating?
Most tomatoes are self-pollinating. I mean, I think all tomatoes are self-pollinating. It's a perfect flower. So bees do pollinate tomatoes and other insects most of the time. Just enough of the wind moving the plant around is enough to get successful pollination of a tomato.
Because the flower, yeah, they do have those little open flowers, and once they start opening, they don't stop.
Yeah, they'll just keep going. Bumblebees are usually what I see in our fields.
I love bumblebees. They're great. They do a lot of work.
Yeah, they're the workhorse of really pollination, at least on our farm. I noticed a lot of honeybees too, but bumblebees, I mean, they'll go out, and when it's windy, when it's cold, when it doesn't really
Yeah.
matter to them.
They're the first ones out.
Yep.
The first bee in my house is always a bumblebee. It's just like then you have to catch them, take them back outside. But they're easier to catch than flies, so I don't mind.
Yeah, they're friendly.
Yeah, they are. And they're beautiful. I grow dahlias, and the single dahlias are the pollinators love them. And one year I got to watch bumblebees mating on my dahlias. Just like it's cool. If you start watching what's going on in your garden, if you start watching, it's not just a person and a plant. There's a lot of other critters, fully at work out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Birds and birds are after everything. Do you grow berries?
Yes, we just put in some blueberries. We have strawberries, raspberries. But we were talking about birds. Obviously, birds and blueberries are enemies, or I guess a bird's best friend is a blueberry. So
Yeah.
we don't have any exclusion netting right now, but that is something that if anyone has blueberries at home, it definitely should consider some sort of bird netting to keep the birds out.
Yeah. Because yeah, it's always a race, between you and the birds. But I think it's sharing is a wonderful thing. We're going to take a quick break. John Ferrante is here from Molecule View Farm Market in New Paltz. They're growing vegetables, and they have all kinds of vegetables starts, and they have hanging baskets of strawberries and tomatoes. I just think that's so cool. So, Garden Show and Home brought to you by North Elm Home Furniture, Accents, and Mattresses on North Elm Avenue in Millerton, northelmhome.com. Limber Tree Services, Hudson Valley's professional arborist, limbertree.com, and SCR Fence. Design and installation of gates and fences for your home, farm, or business. For service commitment and reliability, visit them at scrfence.com. Taking our break, we'll be right back.